Season 2, Episode 5, and we're back in studio this week, and I'm delighted to be joined by the fantastic Owen Jordan. Owen, how are you getting on, sir?
I'm great, Pearson, you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. It's nice to do this in studio because all of Season 1 was done on Zoom.
Okay.
So now that the great pause is over, it's good to have a human being actually right across from me as opposed to being, you know, 3x3 on my computer screen.
That's it, yeah.
How are you doing, man? You're busy,
great.
Yeah, you've been playing a lot. I mean, you've an album just out and you've been playing an awful lot supporting it, haven't you?
I have. It's been a great year. Yeah. It's, I suppose, my first year kind of stepping out into the world of the solo musician, you know.
But
it's been great. Yeah, really, really good experience.
And I was curious to ask you as well. I saw that I know the City Hall now are doing, or sorry, the City Library are doing gigs, and I saw you play there. What was that like?
It was lovely.
Yeah.
Really nice. Yeah.
Good crowd and all turned up?
Yeah. Nice crowd as well. And people kind of drift into things like that, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I guess in a situation like that, it's a listening crowd, isn't it, that you have?
It is.
Which is important. Like.
It's great, yeah. People are used to being quiet in libraries, you know.
Yeah, they're not used to hearing music in them, though.
No, I suppose not.
So, Owen, I asked you to come on to the podcast this week, invited you on to chat about the four songs that you've written that are most personal to you.
Yeah.
Now, the first song that you've chosen was with your old band, which is where I first met you, the Diviners.
That's
and
right.
It's the song Stepping Out, Farewell to Connolly Road. Why did you pick this one?
Why I picked this one? Well, there are two reasons, I guess. The first one, this is the first time I ever committed a lead vocal onto a recording.
Okay.
Onto an officially released recording. It was a nerve-wracking experience at the time. I never identified as a singer.
Okay.
I was a kind of a sideman, or I was a guy who played in bands and maybe did backing vocals. And I was told I couldn't sing for a long time, you know, by people going, you're a good guitar player, like that kind of rubbish. But I had a feeling I could, that there was a voice in there somewhere. And yeah, we recorded this and I put a lead vocal down on it. No, I mean, it's far from perfect, but it's not bad for a first attempt, I guess.
And you said that you always knew there was a voice in there. How did you know that? From singing in the shower or just singing along to your guitar?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so I love the opening line of the song, the opening lines of the song, actually.
Okay.
I'm stepping out of the spotlight. I'm moving into shadow. I'm moving away from the centre of attention. I'm stepping out.
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind that?
Okay, these lyrics are written a long time ago. So we'll put it in context. I'm 47 now.
Okay.
I was 23 when these were written.
Really?
Yeah. So, okay. So there's a structure in the song. It has three verses, three choruses, which is quite simple. But there's a tune as well, which is the Farewell to Connolly Road part.
And so it's like two in one, isn't it?
It is. So that weaves through it, and then that's played out twice at the end. So the tune is written by Anthony Ruby. The song part, we'll say, is written by me. And was written by me when I was 23. So I wrote it then with a different tune part on the end of it.
Okay.
So
when you were 23, so
23,
what was the thinking behind that song?
The thinking behind it at the time, I wasn't a particularly confident person.
Okay.
An awful lot of self-doubt and that. And I was very much a people pleaser as well. I was very concerned with what other people thought. Now, I was thinking about this knowing that I'd have to talk about it coming in here. It sounds like a kind of, there's a kind of a narrative in it where the main character is telling somebody that they're doing something and you can come along with me if you like, sort of thing in the chorus. So it's like one person talking to another person. I've been trying to figure out who the other person is, and I think they're both me.
Okay. So the non-confident you being spoken to by the you who's growing in confidence.
Yeah, or wants to grow in confidence. Yeah.
And the Farewell to Connolly Road.
Yeah.
Are you from there?
No.
Okay.
Anthony Ruby is from there. So
okay.
There's a lovely background story to that. So the Ruby family would have been Huguenots who came from France originally and lived in the inner city part of Cork. So we'll say the Carey's Lane area of Cork.
Okay.
The Huguenot Quarter, they would have resided there. But then later, kind of in the inner city part or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when Ballyfihan was built first, Anthony's grandmother and grandfather got a house on Connolly Road. So his father and the father's sister were reared there. father moved to London, met an Australian woman, got married, moved to Australia, moved back to Cork, and moved back to Connolly Road.
Wow.
So Anthony and his siblings were reared there as well.
And they could have been raised on Sydney Beach.
Could have been.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But a few years back, his parents moved out of there and his grandmother was still living there. But when she passed away, there was nobody to take the house on, so it was sold at that point.
Okay.
So that's the farewell to Connolly Road. It's the Ruby family saying farewell to Connolly Road.
Okay, you know? Okay. We'll have a listen to it and sure, we'll come back and we'll chat some more. Okay, Owen Jordan is my guest on this episode of Foreplay. And this is the first song that he's chosen. It's from his band, the old band called The Diviners. This is Steppin' Out, Farewell to Connolly Road.
I'm stepping out, out of the spotlight. I'm moving into shadow. I'm moving away from the center of attention. I'm stepping out. And you can step out with me. Out of the headlines. Slipstream, just you and me stepping out. I'm stepping out of the line of fire, of the lashing tongues. I'm moving away from the winks and the nudges. Step out with me. Out of the headlines and out of the slipstream.
love it. That end bit is unreal. I remember actually you guys coming into the studios where I work, right, and I remember you playing that for me live and just being blown away by it. Because there was three of you in the Diviners.
There was.
And are the Diviners no more now? Or is it a project that you can go back to?
No, so... That original lineup was myself, Anthony Ruby, and Mick Pierce, who you can hear there at the end playing tenor guitar, that kind of banjo sound. Mick left after about a year and a half, and we brought Kieran Ruby in, Anthony's brother.
That was the trio, I think.
Right. Yeah. He's Kieran's a really versatile musician. You know, great songwriter, great singer as well, and plays multitude of instruments. But Anthony left after a while because he was kind of focusing on his own stuff as well.
And he's a fabulous artist.
He's a brilliant artist, yeah.
Because I think he had something going on down the Ballydehob Jazz Festival, didn't he? He'd done a load of artwork for that.
Yeah, there's a big mural as you come into Ballydehob, And the Mutton Lane, that mural that runs the length of Mutton Lane, that's him.
Okay.
And that new bar where, what do they call it? Where the Pav used to be.
Yeah. It's so the Pav now, isn't it?
Is it the Pav?
Is it?
I have no idea.
Me either.
Welcome to middle age.
Yeah.
there's a time I'd have known that before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's the bar and the upstairs cinema part is full of murals, and Anthony did all of those as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Fair play to him. Yeah. I love the line. I'm stepping out of the line of fire of the lashing tongues and moving away from the winks and the nudges. It's horrible when you're young and you're not quite sure about yourself and that's how you feel is going on around you.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Isn't it? It's hard growing up. Do you know, it's okay when you kind of get to our age now and you kind of look at life and you're like, sure.
You don't care anymore.
No, but when you're a teenager or in your early 20s, God, it can be tough.
It can, but that stuff shapes you too, I suppose, you know. Yeah, I used to look back on that kind of thing and be resentful towards certain people. But what's the point? Mm-hmm. Life's too short, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Once you learn from these things and you move on, that's all that matters, really.
Yeah, and I like that one as well. I'm stepping out of the dance floor and throwing crazy shapes. So, you and Zoe's bopping away.
It was the Forum. Do you remember the Forum nightclub? That would have been, so it was the same floor where Chandra's used to be.
Okay.
It was the Forum later. It was like a kind of an indie nightclub or whatever. So you'd have Henry's going on in the Henry section, and then I suppose it was technically the same floor, but it was, upstairs in the Grand Parade Hotel. That's where I picture in the head anyway. So throwing crazy shapes is an expression a friend of mine used to use. He died years ago, but he was a real character, the same guy. And it was kind of, if we were all out and we were having a mad night, he'd be talking about it afterwards, saying, they were all trying mad, crazy shapes.
So that's an ode to him.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's nice, too, to remember people in songs. Now, what shaped you as a musician? I mean, you wrote this in your early 20s.
Yeah.
So you were obviously playing way back then,
right?
When did you get started? When did your music journey begin?
I was attracted to music from day one. I was thinking about this recently because someone asked, what's the first song you can remember? I can remember that Matchstock Men and Matchstock Cats and
Dogs.
Yeah,
it's a great song.
Yeah. And having to find out then who it was about, that artist, L.S. Lowry, and, you know, finding out about his paintings. After, Jesus, I must have been only 7 or something when I had to find out about this, you know.
Yeah.
So that, but my father was into a lot of music. Mostly kind of folk music, you know. So you listen to a lot of Irish folk music. So I heard Christy Moore and the Dubliners, and there was he had the first Planxty album at home, things like that. But he was into a lot of American singer-songwriters as well, or people from that side of the world. So, you know, he was big into Glen Campbell. He was into Neil Young, Kris Kristofferson, you know, early Bob Dylan,
legends,
stuff like that. Yeah, that's it. So I was hearing a lot of these, and he loved Simon and Garfunkel and people like that too. So, you know, I mean,
it's funny hearing you say it because we're close in age, and as a youngster would have listened to a lot of that because my dad did, especially Glen Campbell. When I hear, like, my dad is still here, he's 82 and he's still rocking. Yeah. But when I hear Rhinestone Cowboy, it just reminds me of being a little kid because I used to think I was a cowboy. So my dad then used to play it, you know?
So did I. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I suppose I was shaped by a lot of that, but you know yourself, then you come into whatever, being 10, 11, stuff like that. I remember being, you remember that Vincent Hanley programme, the
MTV USA?
Yeah, exactly. So like the theme tune was Follow Me by Rory Gallagher, which I wouldn't have known at the time, but I just knew it was this really cool guitar sound. And then they'd play things like Money for Nothing and, you know,
they're
stuff
straight,
like that. Yeah,
they?
Yeah. So I was hearing a lot of this guitar-based stuff and I was saying, oh, this was doing something. Of course, U2 were huge at the time as well. So, you know, you couldn't help but be drawn to Pride and things like that, you know.
And when did you first start playing? When did you first pick up an instrument?
When I was 15.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I got a copy of a Fender Strat. It was a Marlin Slammer, it was called. I bought it in Crowley's Music Shop. Yeah, and that was it. Started straight away. Wrote my first song within about a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Lyrics and music?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't really call them lyrics or music. It was some kind of a sonic shape anyway. Yeah, yeah.
And was it all that vibe, that strain of music then that you played always, or did you play in multiple different bands?
Multiple different
metal things. Music ever?
Yeah, briefly, yeah. I wasn't very good at it, at playing metal. I could do the rhythm stuff, but like this... You know yourself, you were around metal bands years ago as well. There's a certain discipline to playing metal, and there's an awful snobbery towards it too from people who don't play it. Like, it's just noise, you know.
Yeah, no,
try
it's not.
Playing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or try playing it well, you know.
It's very intricate at times.
It is, yeah. So I did that for a while, but there was a draw towards traditional music. Something was drawing me towards that, and certainly around the time that these lyrics and the initial melody of this song was written. That's why it's in kind of a jig rhythm or whatever. I was really drawn towards traditional music, and I was hearing songwriters like Richard Thompson. John Spillane's first solo album was just out at the time, so I was hearing that. People like Sonny Condell, who was with Scullion, and they'd write using those rhythms that you'd hear in, you know, Irish dance tunes and stuff like that, you know, traditional dance tunes. I was saying, okay, I'm going to try this, you know. So that was my first attempt at that.
And I love, and I think it's a traditional tuning as well, Dadgad.
Yeah.
I love the sound of that. I always remember years and years and years ago, and I was playing, me and this guy were writing together, and I remember he came up, he said, oh, I've this weird tuning. He said, it's big in trad circles, Dadgad. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It was luxurious.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, the second song that you've picked, and now what we're doing is we're focusing on songs that are from your album that's out, Hand Me Down the Moon. But that's not the song that we're focusing on right now.
No.
The second song that you picked is called Shadow from the Past. Mm. Why did you pick this one, Owen?
Well, this one isn't actually on the album. This will be on album number two. The reason it wasn't on the album is I did this song with Declan Sinnott.
Okay.
Well, I've known Declan for a good few years. We're quite friendly, and he invited me to come down and record a song with him. So you don't wait to be asked the second time, you know. So I went down with a song in mind that I was in the process of recording with someone else, and Declan was aware that I was recording this with someone else. So he said, no, I think we should leave that. You should do that with this other person, which I did, even though Declan played on it. Which we'll get to for the next song. Anyway, so he asked if I had anything else, and I was in the process of recording an album with Dave O'Connell at the time, who I know you know as well.
Yeah, from the cabin, what's the
bunker.
The bunker, that's
the
what
bunker
it is. Good old
East
Dave,
Cork. Yeah. So a lot of the songs I had started with Dave already, and I didn't really want to be dragging them in and then re-recording them with Declan. So I said, look, I have this song that I wrote years ago, but it kind of... it goes a bit deep under the skin for me, so I kind of have trouble with it. And he said, okay, let's take a look at it. And I played him that. Now, I used to do it in much darker style, you know, probably more like a kind of Townes Van Zandt, that kind of thing, like kind of countryish, but really, really dark. And he said, okay, it's a really good song. We'll shine a bit of light on it.
And that's what
he
did.
And then we started recording it, and yeah. It didn't fit in with the rest of the album then, because it had been recorded by somebody else and had different production values and all that in it. So it will be on album number two, which I'm currently doing with Declan. So,
oh, fab. Yeah. And Shadow from the Past. What is the Shadow from the Past that you talk about?
Shadow from the Past is chapter number 3, I think, in The Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
So I remember reading that years ago, you know, as we all did. And it stood out and I was like, I thought, I like the sound of that. And nobody has picked up on it, actually.
Okay. Well, yeah. The wheel now after this.
Of course, yeah.
And I have to say what I love too about your songwriting style, and I guess it probably goes with the style of music that you play, is, you know, some songs have, like, there could be four words in a line and they're very quick. Whereas with you, it is very much storytelling, and you allow yourself, and the songs allow you to tell the story lyrically.
Again, that comes back to what I heard growing up. So, you know, hearing, again, Glen Campbell, you know, singing Jimmy Webb songs, things like that. Hearing Neil Young, even though sometimes you wouldn't know what he was talking about, but there was a narrative in it, you know. Mm. John Prine was another person I heard a lot. Christy Moore always sang kind of story songs as well. So
I love your singing voice, but there's times where it's almost like you're talking as well.
Okay, yeah.
You know, you're telling a story.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I pick up and what I can hear.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
All right, that's all right. I'm not too far off the mark. Anyway, we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and we'll chat some more. Okay, this is Shadow from the Past.
As a child, something set inside, you'll amount to nothing, you'll be lucky if you survive. So I spent those early years as frightened as a deer. I learned to keep my mouth shut, knowing it was always near. There's a shadow from the past that follows after me. It's like a weight around my neck, will not let me be. I hit the teenage years, I started to rebel, out of rage and frustration, which I know well. I lashed out like a madman, I hid like a thief, but in my cloak of silence I was shaking just like a leaf. There's a shadow from the past that follows after me. It's like a weight around my neck that will not let me be. older. It seems I've come to terms. Maybe I've got a handle on it. But there's a lot I've yet to learn. The wage can bring you wisdom. And you mellow with the time. The shadow from the past is never too far behind. There's a shadow from the past that follows after me. It's like a weight around my neck that will not let me be.
Love the guitar solo in between chorus 2 and verse 3. Very emotive.
Yeah, yeah. That's Declan, yeah. I sat there with him when he was doing that and, like, he's, you know, people know he's obviously a really good guitar player. You don't get to play with Mary Black and Christy Moore and Moving Hearts, Horselips, if you're
average.
Not that good. Yeah, but, like, that's all off the cuff. So it's not like he hasn't sat there and worked these out. He just sits there and he plays.
He's feeling
and
it.
You're sitting there across from him going, oh my God. You know, it's, yeah.
Wow.
A different level of musician, you know.
Gorgeous. But I mean, just the sounds in that song, even at the start, you know that the country and western guys use it. It looks like a guitar, but it's kind of like
a pedal steel.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I think that's what you have.
No, not on that one. Not on that one.
What is that sound so at the very, very start?
That's Declan playing slide guitar.
Ah,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But it has that whole feel and that vibe to it, which is real Americana. I mean,
It is. It's funny, I suppose, like a lot of musicians, I don't listen to my stuff very often, you know, because you listen to it a lot when you're recording it. And then once it's done,
it's out there.
It kind of is, yeah, pretty much. So you're not going to go, you know, I have an option. I can sit down, I can listen to, I don't know, Robert Plant or something, or I can listen to me. I think I listen to Robert Plant, you know. And you probably get too close to the thing when you're recording it. But it was funny listening to that. I mean, the speakers are really good in here for a start anyway. But I could hear, like, there's all little bits and pieces going on in the background that I'd forgotten about. Jesus, it's, you know, that I didn't have anything to do with it. It was Declan was doing that stuff. And even Vicky Keating there, her backing vocal on the chorus, stunning.
That's who I was going to ask you. Who is that?
Yeah, Vicky Keating, yeah.
Yeah, funnily enough, last week's episode, Anya O'Gorman was my guest.
Oh, yeah.
And her and Vicky Scherer, a duo.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. They're both brilliant, too.
Yeah, both incredible, incredible. And what I also love is, in the song, it's like three different parts.
Mm.
You know, when you were a kid, a lot of turmoil. Teenage years, you're reacting to that turmoil.
Yeah.
And then when you're, I love, now that I'm much older, it seems I've come to terms. Maybe I've got a handle on it, but there's a lot of yet to learn. Is that the case?
I think there's a verse probably missing there as well somewhere.
Because I think also it follows on then, and this is so true, right? Though age can bring you wisdom and you mellow with the time, the shadow from the past is never too far behind.
Yeah, so it goes back to the stepping out thing. It's that kind of
insecurities.
Am I good enough? You know, all that kind of thing. You know, and like you were saying, you know, we get a bit older and you care less about what other people think. But partly you will question yourself. And
And that's The Shadow from the Past Never Being Too Far Behind. Yeah. And did you, as a teenager, did you rebel to those insecurities?
Yeah.
Did it help?
No, probably not.
Did it help at the time, though?
It probably helped me. I'm not sure if it helped my parents very much.
And when you wrote this song, you said it was a lot darker, obviously. And then when you went to Declan Sinnott and you kind of shone a bit of light on it. Mm. However, when you were going there and you knew that you were going to work with him, was the finished product, was it kind of what you had hoped in your own mind that it would turn out?
As it is now, this version, it's complete. You see, I didn't go in with the intention of recording this with him anyway. I went in with another one, which is actually the next one we're going to look at. I thought we were going to do Amber. So it was very much off the cuff doing it then. And I thought, I'm not sure if this song is good enough. But I mean, sitting and listening to it there, I'd say it was.
It's good enough. And the vocal is just.
Yeah.
It's emotive.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the main reasons for picking it is because this is the first thing I ever put out under my own name.
This one?
That's my first step out as a solo.
And when was that?
That was early last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was this version that you put out?
Yeah.
Okay, so this will be on the second album.
Yeah. Just to confuse things.
So it's kind of, you're teasing people.
Yeah.
And how's the work on the new album going?
Great, yeah. We've 3 songs pretty much done now at this stage. It's sounding great. I mean, he's a fantastic producer, you know.
You're excited?
Yeah. I really like it. And, you know, I think from gigging so much over the last year as well, I'm, to use a football analogy, probably match fit as well. Like, so it's, you know, it feels easier and it's, you know.
Yeah.
Feels more natural as well. Yeah.
How's the new album being received? Their current one?
The current one? Really good. Yeah.
Were you nervous stepping out from, we said, you know, you're with the Diviners, so I guess in a band situation, there's always that kind of comfort.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny that the first song was Stepping Out, because I see you now as you stepped out from the security of having other people.
That's right, yeah.
And very much exposing yourself.
Yeah.
And one thing I always say to every guest, the content, I mean, when you write a song, it's your deepest, darkest fears or, you know, your hang-ups.
Mm.
And now we all know. And that's very brave.
Yeah, but I suppose the important thing is what other people get out of it, you know. Well, I mean, look, I'll be honest, I write songs for me. I don't write them for other people, but...
But when you put it out there, I mean, you're actually putting your soul out to people to see what's in your deepest, darkest soul. What makes your tick go talk, you know?
But they'll have to... I think for it to resonate with most people, they'll have to identify with something in it.
Yeah.
And that song, The Shadow from the Past in particular, seems to have resonated with people a lot.
Mm.
I've had a lot of people say that, you know, there was a couple of people when I played it for them, they started crying and I thought, is it that bad?
That's powerful. It's the power of lyrics,
is.
Isn't it?
And it was amazing to see people reacting in that way to it. I thought, okay, you know.
And I guess that's given you confidence as a songwriter and a performer going forward, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I always remember, as I said, when we first met, you were with the Diviners. Mm. And I always remember when you were leaving and you turned to me and you said, oh, and by the way, just to let you know, I'm working on some of my own solo stuff, so I'll be back in touch with you. And I was like, bring it on. And here we are.
There you go.
Here we are. And I love the chorus. There's a shadow from the past that follows after me. And I love this bit. It's like a weight around my neck that will not let me be.
Mm.
That no matter what, no matter how we progress as beings or whatever, we still have, we're middle-aged. We don't care, but we do. Sometimes. Stop and think.
We do.
And you go, jeez.
Or I guess you could equate it to people who suffer with depression or things like that, you know. You're never going to be better from it, you know. So
it's about making it your friend.
That's
and
it,
being okay
exactly.
with it.
Yeah. I remember my wife showed me a cartoon before. It was somebody had done a cartoon of a person with a big black dog, and the size of the dog changes depending on how their depression is. You know, and at the end, they're friends. You know.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting take on it. That whole kind of thing. You know, that you'll never be done with these things, but you just got to learn to manage it. And as you said, be friends with it. You know, the same with people who go through addiction issues and, and that. You're never going to be better, but you've got to learn to manage it and live with it. So that could be the shadow from the past too.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. At what point of your playing career, or at what point when you were playing, did you realise this is for me?
That playing music was for me? Oh, straight away, really. Yeah. Yeah. From a very early age, music resonated with me, you know, in a way that it could affect my mood. If I was somewhere and there was music on that I didn't like, even as a kid, I'd get annoyed about it, you know. The concept of background music just doesn't make sense to me, you know.
I always find it very frustrating for bands and musicians when I see them playing in a pub.
Yeah.
And it's like you're the background music turned down because people are...
As opposed
to a gig where people go actually to see you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's one of the most disrespectful things. I think they should be playing just a, I don't know, a CD at that stage, if that's the case.
I suppose so, but you know...
Is there a part of where you have to learn to battle through those gigs?
You probably do, yeah. Yeah. Or you make the choice, okay, am I able to do that? Am I able to play in wedding bands and stuff like that, where it is your job to entertain? And similarly, if you're playing in a pub or whatever, it is your job to be background noise. So, you know, there's a certain discipline that goes with that too, you know. I've done plenty of it over the years, but I can't say I particularly enjoy it because...
Because no one's listening to you, ultimately. Yeah, like, they're hearing you, but they're not listening to
you. My ego needs to be massaged, and it's not getting it, you know. But, you know, I mean, especially if you're up there playing your own songs, you want them to be heard.
Yeah.
You know, if you're singing Wagon Wheel or something, it doesn't really matter.
To date, what's one of the most memorable gigs you've played?
Good question. I did one recently that during the Cork Folk Festival, I played in the Triskel, and I've never played in the Triskel before. Yeah, I
what supported. Acoustics.
Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah.
Who did you support?
Danu. They're a traditional band from Waterford. They'd be...
Big in the scene, yeah.
Big on the trad scene. But it was just... the whole thing was lovely. I love the Cork Folk Festival anyway, you know. William Hammond and, you know, all the people that organise it, Jim Walsh, and they do it right, you know. And it doesn't matter if you're the support act, if you're the main act, you're treated the same, which is just... It's brilliant. And I went in there, and I mean, again, I'm playing to a folky crowd, so I couldn't lose, really, unless I was awful. But the reaction was fantastic. And it was like, you know, they weren't just politely clapping at the end of the songs, like people were bursting into applause, and this is great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess all along, even though you knew very early in your musical journey that this was for you, I guess along that journey then, there's different little points where you go, ah, yeah, this is for me.
Yeah.
Not that you need reaffirming, but I guess a gig like the Folk Festival in the Triskel and the audience are going mental for you, that, it kind of justifies what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
To yourself.
Yeah. But I've listened to and watched interviews with a lot of musicians. I find Mark Knopfler a really interesting one to watch because his approach, I mean, the man is an incredibly gifted guitar player and songwriter, but he treats it like a craftsman. I remember a couple of interviews where he's been asked, you know, oh, so what are you going to do later on, you know, after this? I'd probably go at the songs for a while. So going at the songs, like as if he was chiseling another little bit off it or, you know, I find that fascinating. And it's all about, you know, improving on what you do all the time.
And what's your approach when you write? I mean, are you a lyrics first guy? Do you play guitar? Do you come up with the melody first and then the lyrics follow? Are you one of these guys at 3 a.m. it flows through you?
No, thankfully I don't have the 3 a.m. experience.
The wife wouldn't be happy with that either.
No.
Waking her up singing into
phone.
Phone.
Yeah. Often there'll be little bits of music or maybe a chord structure or something like that that I'll be playing, you know, just playing guitar or a banjo or something at home. And that'll come out and you go, oh, I must remember that. And there's little bits of these in the phone all over the place. The lyrics thing is sometimes it can be just something triggers it. I hear a phrase or something And I go, okay, you know, I must do something with that.
Mm.
Yeah. And usually if I write lyrics for a song, I'll write the bones of it in one sitting. And I'll go back and, like the Mark Knopfler thing, chisel away at it until bits of it fit. And then when you go to record it, you'll end up changing little bits again because you're under the microscope then at that stage. So
it's kind of nice when you look at your heroes or the people that you really admire in the music industry and you take little tidbits from them, isn't it?
Oh, Christ, yeah. Standing on the shoulders of giants, like that's...
Yeah.
That's the only way. I mean, nobody arrives fully formed into anything, whether it's your job or being a parent or, you know, being a husband or a wife. Nobody arrives fully formed. You have to learn, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the beauty of music, is you'll never learn enough.
No, no. And the day you stop learning, you're finished.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of equate that to everything. I approach my job like that as well, you know. I have to keep learning to progress, because otherwise you just get stagnant.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we'll take a look at the third song that you've picked. It's the very beautiful Amber. Why did you pick this one?
Well, it's a special song for me anyway. I wrote this with a friend of mine. Jerry McCarthy is his name. So I've been friends with Jerry for 30 years now at this stage. He's an artist. He lives down in West Cork. He was raised on a farm. He's into working on the land, loves gardening, you know, lives a very kind of...
He loves nature.
Yeah,
one with nature.
A very kind of earthy, peaceful life, you know, lives outside Skibbereen up in a hill, beautiful place, looking out over the sea and that. And we talk quite a lot on the phone, you know, and he can be very articulate in conversations. And I suggested that maybe he should think about writing, you know, because he'd never really done creative writing. And he wrote a piece. He didn't say he would or he wouldn't, but he wrote a piece and sent it to me and said, look, see what you think of that. And it was beautiful, you know. And I said, OK, do you mind if I take that and see if I can make a song out of it? And he said, yeah, work away. So I did. Like, I mean, you know, years of playing music, I kind of know how to craft a song at this stage. So, and OK, that bit'll work there as a chorus.
Get the chisel out again.
That's it, exactly. And... yeah, and it just needed an extra verse, so I asked him, are you okay with me writing a bit? Oh yeah, work away. So I wrote the last verse and that was it. Very simple chord structure. Threw one funny chord in there just to throw people off the scent.
And I love the little drum at the start.
Yeah.
It grabs you.
Yeah.
But it's not overbearing.
No.
It's the less is more attitude, I think.
That's
but it brings you nicely into the song.
So the main part of the song, which is bouzouki and a guitar and my vocal, is recorded with Dave O'Connell, and then we sent it down to Declan Sennett, and Declan did the... So there's a slide guitar, there's a kind of a nylon string guitar, and there's an electric guitar with a wah-wah at the end. That's all Declan. Actually, that drum pattern is Declan too, so again, spread his magic all over the thing. Like, he's just... Yeah.
And getting back to your friend, Jerry, I always find that people that are so connected with nature, I'm very jealous because I think... That's half the problem with the world. We're ruining this planet that we should be connecting with.
Mm.
And I think if we connected with it more, it would be a better place.
That's it, yeah.
You know, so I'm always very jealous of these people because I think they're quite zen because they're at one with our environment.
Yeah. My wife was talking last night about my grandmother because my wife loves gardening, and a friend of hers is really into gardening too, and they were talking about it, and she was on about splitting a plant or splitting a tree or something, and she was saying my grandmother had done it for her a few years back when she was still alive. But she was one of those people, you know, she came from, they were very earthy people. They when she was growing up, they grew their own food, and they all seemed to naturally know how to, I don't know, prune things and all this kind of stuff.
I'd chop a finger off if I was trying to prune something.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, my fingers are precious. I need. But yeah, I wouldn't have a clue. I'm not sure I'd have the interest either.
I think I like the thought
that
I have the interest.
Yeah.
But then it's getting down and dirty with it. I become disinterested very quickly. Now, my mother's a real gardening person. Mm. And I would do, in fairness now, because they're elderly, so I go down and in the summertime there I have to do, because my mother has an amazing back garden.
Okay.
So I got stuck into it, and yeah, it was all cuts and this and that and the other thing. And But to me, I kind of just looked at it as a project. Mm. Whereas my mother gets really, she loves the feel of the dirt through her fingers that.
Yeah.
And an ex-mother-in-law of mine, he nearly used to talk to plants. She loved them that much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think my wife loves that too, all that kind of digging around in the dirt. My father-in-law was like that too. He kind of had that natural thing. He was from Offaly, you know, quite a rural part of Offaly too. They were all into that kind of growing stuff and, you know, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it?
Nice stuff to write about.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll have a listen to Amber and we'll come back and we'll chat some more about it.
Race round and take her feet off the ground. This young girl needs to slow down. She can't seem to breathe in the golden amber, translucency. She gives into it all, thinks that she is free. With both fists clenched, trying to be what she thinks the world wants her to be. Till one day she stood before the glass, and the face of a drinker was staring back at her in the golden amber translucency. She gives into it all, that she is free. It hung high in the air. She watched it glide, brown and gold, majestic in the blue, in the golden amber translucency. She gives into it all, thinks that she is free. In the golden amber translucency, she gives into it all, thinks that she is free.
Playing on that is unbelievable. You know what it's like? You know when you get a lot of Skittles and you throw them into your mouth and there's this multitude of tastes?
Yes.
That's what it's like. It's the musical version of stuffing Skittles into your mouth.
I think it almost sounds like it's poured rather than actually played. You know?
The chocolate sauce over when it pours in through everything. Oh my God. One take, Mr. Sin. It's incredible.
Unbelievable.
Who is Amber? Who is the she that gives into it all and thinks that she is free?
Yeah, the she isn't really anybody. So Amber, there are three facets to the Amber in the song. Amber could be the character's name. Amber is also a crystal that is known for healing properties.
Okay.
So it could be that it's seeking healing in that sense. Amber is also the colour of a lot of intoxicating liquor, whiskey and beer and that. So giving into it all, she gives into it all, thinks that she is free. Maybe it's surrendering to drunkenness.
Yeah, that's...
Or maybe it's surrendering to the healing. The healing being Amber as well.
Because I love that verse where it ends with, until one day she stood before the glass and the face of a drinker was staring back at her.
Mm, mm.
And I was thinking, ooh, what's this?
Yeah.
And that's the... It's funny that you said amber is the colour of intoxicants because it was kind of, you know, she pushes and twists with both fists clenched, trying to be what she thinks the world wants her to be. We do ourselves the worst damage doing other people's thinking all the time.
That's
If we cared a little less what other people thought, the world would be an amazing place.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I do think we have progressed. Because I remember growing up in Cork in the 80s and you'd look at the annoying Americans on the telly going, you have a good day now, sir. And now we all say it because it's positive. It's actually, you reinforce things with people when you speak positively to them, even if it's only a very passing, like I do it all the time. I go into a shop, go up to the shop counter and my parting thing is always, have a great day. And I genuinely mean it. I want them to have a great
day.
That's
great.
And I kind of hope that if they're a little bit grumpy, that something like that, they may go, oh, nice customer, because not every customer is going to say that, you know?
Yeah, that's it, But it is, it is good to see that level of positivity. I don't know what that is, really. I suppose maybe we've come out of ourselves as a nation a bit, you know?
Because, like, people go on about the 80s all the time. And I mean, I grew up in it and it was my decade for music, I guess, when I was turned into a teenager and into a young adult, learning music about girls, about life, about acne, about everything. But I always think it's funny when people look back at the 80s now and they hear the music and we see the American 80s movies or movies based on the 80s and the clothes were so colourful and fantastic. Not here.
No, we had the rubbish you got in Duns and
Kings. Because, I mean, Ireland only really started to modernise in the 90s. End of the 80s, coming into the 90s. Before that, I think we were stuck in the fashion from the 60s and the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the theory, Italian 90, isn't it? Or is it Euro 88, is it really?
So that was the first of it, was it?
That's the start of it. Isn't it that? And then qualifying for the World Cup and getting to the quarterfinals, that's supposed to be the start of the Celtic Tiger and the kind of the emergence of Ireland as a...
Because it wasn't. I mean, we had lovely green fields, but there was nothing really modern about it.
Oh, God, no.
You know?
Yeah.
But Amber, what a woman. And in the golden amber, I love this word, translucency.
Translucency, yeah. So the crystal would be translucent, but a liquid would also be translucent. So it kind of, I suppose it puts a bit of ambiguity in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I guess I can also see your friend Jerry's influence from being one at nature is right throughout the song. Right throughout the song.
Yeah.
Did she get free?
I don't know. Well, at the end, she's watching a bird flying, so she might be happy then.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, the final song. And this is also quite a special thing because season two, as I said, it's been special because I've been able to have human beings in the same room as me. But now, not only have I a human being in the same room as me, you're actually going to play the last one live.
Yes.
Now, this is the title track of the album, and it's also on it. Hand Me Down the Moon. Tell me about this. Why did you pick this one? Why is this important to you?
I suppose the lyrics are personal in it anyway. I reached a point in my life where I had to make a few decisions, you know. I won't go into that now, but I had to make a few decisions about what I was going to do with myself and all this kind of thing. And I kind of was seeking guidance and going, okay, certain things I've been doing to this point, I don't really want to do them anymore.
Personally or musically?
No, I'd say personally more okay. than anything else. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Decisions around work and things like that, that you know, I think I was probably stepping in the right direction. I'd gone back to education in my late 30s, things like that, you know.
Funny enough, I was the exact. I went back to education in my 30s to get into radio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. I'd had an old career and I was done with it.
Okay.
And period of being on government handouts.
Oh, yes.
And then I moved back to Cork and it was like, right, fresh start, new things. What am I going to do?
And was it a journalism course or?
Radio broadcasting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Stefan Nafe on Tramore Road.
Very good.
They have a brilliant course out there, 2-year
course. Okay, yeah, yeah.
The amount of people where I work that have come through is incredible. Mm. But it was like in my mid-30s, I'd had a good career to date, but I was done with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, I was a counsellor, and I'd suffered a death of a loved one, and I didn't have it in me to sit down and listen to other people's feelings and emotions when I was struggling with my own.
Yeah.
So that's what I had to walk away and decide, right, what am I going to do? I moved to Cork. Said, okay, whatever I want to do, this is going to be for the rest of my life, but I want to do something I love.
Mm.
And I'd worked in radio in the 80s, pirate radio in the 80s.
Okay, did you? I didn't know that.
South Coast Radio back in the day.
Yeah.
So then that's da-da-da, here I am all these years later. I kind of get what you mean being at those crossroads in life.
And South Coast was the precursor to where you currently work.
No, ERI.
Okay,
they went into the building, that the old ERI building.
Okay,
and they were Radio South for a while.
Yes,
and then,
that's
then they
right,
rebranded to 96 FM. Okay, it's memories.
I remember that's, ERI. Yeah.
You were either an ERI fan or a South Coast Radio fan, and I was a South Coast fan.
Okay.
Prior, and then I got to work there as a like young teenager. I was 14 and on the air.
Who was on South Coast? Was
we
John
had,
Creedon on it?
Was John? I don't think so, no. We had Ken Tobin on it, Rob Allen, Nick Richards, Pete O'Neill, who would have been rightly behind the setting up of Radio South. PJ was on it at one time. And then on ERI, then you had PJ was there as well. You had Neil. All the kind of older generation.
Yeah. Derry O'Callaghan was there as well.
That's right,
yeah. Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So I get it. I guess the moon got handed down to me when I moved to Cork.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. So that's the idea. I mean, I remember telling you that before when I did an interview on the Arts Show with you. Hand Me Down the Moon's an old Cork nickname. So, like, Sheena Crowley told me, actually, her father, Mick Crowley, who had Crowley's music shop.
Who didn't buy a guitar in there?
I don't know.
I don't know anybody that didn't.
No, yeah. Nobody over the age of 40 in Cork anyway. Yeah. So he was a tall, thin man, and it was a nickname for tall, thin people, you know.
Hand Me Down the Moon.
Hand Me Down the Moon.
Ah. Yeah.
But I just kind of changed the context of it. So it's kind of like an imaginary hand reaching up and grabbing the moon and using that as the kind of your guiding light or whatever, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll hear you play it and we'll chat some more. Okay. So this is the final song that Owen has picked. This is the title track of his latest album and he's playing it live. This is Hand Me Down the Moon.
To be wrong, those thoughts you had carried along, opinions dispatched from the moral high ground with a look that would cut you in two, and like Damascus of old in view, some thinking along right out of the blue, knocked you off your feet, took the wind out of you. Now you're lost and it's all gone askew. Hand me down the moon, won't you hand me down the moon? And please shine a light on my way. I'm not looking for the North Star or Saint Christopher. And please won't you hand me down the moon? The journey begins and so it must end. We go with the ebb and the flow. Our course is not set, but a favoring wind might take us where we wanna go. A destination might not be in a chart. Where you intended, right back at the start. We're at the mercy of the elements from the word go. The rain and the ice and the snow. Hand me down the moon, won't you hand me down the moon? And please shine a light on my way. Not looking for the North Star or Saint Christopher. And please won't you hand me down the moon.
Time I get to clap. Ever. Our destination might not be on a chart or where you intended, right back at the start. We're at the mercy of the elements from the word go. Love those lines. Because you kind of are when you're making changes in your life and you're making new decisions. You kind of are winging it a little bit and you are at the mercy of a lot of stuff, aren't you?
Yeah.
Scary, but it's good to do it, don't
you think?
That's
it, yeah. I mean, you're a dad as well. You remember that first day when you take your new baby home? It's, oh my God. Nobody gave you a manual or anything. You got to figure it out.
They always say you learn on the first.
Yeah.
My eldest daughter's like, oh yeah, great. So I was the guinea pig for the mistakes. And I'm like, yeah. Of course. And now the progression is now I'm a grandfather.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, so it is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I also love the lines at the start. When all that was right turned out to be wrong, those thoughts you had carried along, opinions dispatched from the moral high ground with a look that would cut you in two.
Yeah.
Who's that directed at?
Oh, that's me. Yeah. So when all that was right turned out to be wrong, I had various certainties in how I thought and opinions I had on certain things that I was absolutely definite of. And then I reached a point and I thought, maybe I'm not so sure about those anymore. Yeah.
You were very critical on yourself, so. The moral high ground, what a look that would cut you in two.
Yeah, I was heavily involved in trade union politics in my early 30s, I suppose. Yeah, so I was, yeah, a sanctimonious pain in the ass at the time. So that's what that is, you know, because I was from the moral high ground, you know.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. It's interesting that it was you, because when I read the lyric, yeah, I thought it was someone else was on the moral high ground giving you the look because you're making changes. But no, it was you.
No. It's, yeah, I had been on the moral high ground and I was the one with all these opinions. And I just reached a point when I thought, well, maybe I'm not right, you know.
Mm.
Just because somebody has a different opinion to me doesn't mean they're wrong.
Mm. That very much is kind of 30s, isn't it?
Yeah, pushing 40, definitely. Yeah. You start thinking that way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then once you get into your 40s, it's like, yeah. And it's even more of a yeah when you get into your 50s, trust me.
I'm not far off, but I'll figure out soon. Yeah, I just found things like, you know, the way somebody votes, if somebody's a different opinion to you and things like that.
So hasn't social media, though, driven that off something really bad, especially around voting, you know, and you're watching it and people are like, if I find out that you vote for, I'm not talking to you anymore. And it's like, right, thank God, good luck. You know, because and you see on social media people putting up and stating what they're voting. To me, when you vote, it's private.
It is. It
you know, you're in a ballot box.
Yeah.
It's between you and what you put down on that piece of paper. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like,
that's it. Unless you've actually actively campaigned on someone's behalf or whatever, you know, then you're putting yourself out in public. But
yeah.
Yeah. I'm like you on that score, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's private. Leave me alone.
Exactly, yeah.
Leave me alone. What's next for you? I know you're working on the album, but what's the next 12 months? What have you got coming up?
Well, that's the main thing is the album.
When do you hope to have it finished on?
Well, there's a bit of life hopefully left in the current one.
Yeah, because so, you don't want to be releasing it too soon.
No, because then you got the awkward third album to do. Yeah, so then the live album gets thrown out.
And then you have the greatest hits.
Exactly, yeah. That's the way it works, isn't it?
And are you obviously still actively touring the latest album.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I suppose it'll be before this goes out. I'm in Collins with the Remedy Club, supporting the Remedy Club this Sunday, which is the 20th of November, which will have been probably last Sunday when this comes up. I've got a couple of nice gigs coming up in December. So
okay, where?
I'm doing one in Music Zone in Toker, an in-store there. With
they were the guys who used to be in Douglas, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Supportive of
brilliant. Yeah,
local
yeah.
live
That's
music.
It. Yeah, Ray O'Brien.
Yeah, Ray.
He's a fantastic.
And there was another guy who used to work there. I think he's gone now. The young fellow used to work there with him as well. He was always there. And he only left, I think, in the last kind of year or so,
was
maybe.
It Bobby, was it?
I think it might be, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, I'm doing an in-store there with two other musicians that I'm friendly with. Conor O'Sullivan, I don't know, would you know Conor? He's Conor be a well-known face in the trad scene around Cork. And Jason O'Driscoll is the other guy.
Okay.
They're both living up Blarney direction, two fantastic musicians and great songwriters too. So we said we'd get together and do that.
Cool. When is that?
That's the first Saturday in December, whatever that is.
Okay.
And I think we're playing in Maureen's Bar. Do you know that?
Yeah. Just there on John Redmond Street.
That's it, exactly.
Gorgeous.
It's lovely, yeah.
It's really snug little venue.
It is, yeah. It's just a lovely place to play. So the three of us are playing in there as well. I think that's the 13th of December, which is a Tuesday or a Wednesday night, something like that. I have another gig down in Leavis's in Ballydehob.
I'm dying to get down there.
Have you never been down
there? I've never been down there.
It's magic.
And the guy who owns it,
Joe,
I've interviewed him so many times. And each time it's like, yeah, I'll definitely get down, Joe.
Yeah.
And he's said to me, room's upstairs if you want
That's
to come
right.
down.
Yeah.
And I've yet to make it down there.
Oh, it's lovely.
Because I know if I go down, I'd probably have to go on a Friday. And realistically, I won't be coming back till about a Monday.
Yeah.
I can imagine getting lost down there.
I had my stag night down there. Sorry, it was a stag weekend, really, because it was like that. Went down on the Friday and came back on Monday. Yeah.
When are you playing there?
The 27th of December. So I am doing that with Mick Daly, who's kind of a legend of the Cork music scene. You know,
I've heard that name.
Mick is in the Lee Valley String Band since, I suppose, since God was a boy, as the expression goes. But like, he played with Mary Black. He was in Scullion, Four Men and a Dog, Arcady, any old time, loads of really well known traditional bands. And he's one of the guys, himself and the Lee Valley String Band were kind of an introduction to American roots music for me, you know, the kind of the old timey and the bluegrass thing, because I didn't really hear that. I heard a lot of folk music growing up and singer-songwriter stuff, but not that kind of stuff. And
but I love how you've mashed it all in together.
Yeah.
When I hear your songs, I'm hearing Americana, I'm hearing grassroots, I'm hearing blues, I'm hearing folk, I'm hearing trad, I'm hearing country and western, like American country and western. That's the real country and western to me.
The words,
no,
the words
no
country and Irish should not go in the same sentence. Sorry.
Now, there's some that are very, very good. And they've started to Americanize a lot more. Like, to me, I remember as a kid growing up, there was an Irish country band called The Indians.
I always
remember as a kid, there used to be a show, I think, on a Sunday night where they'd have show bandy kind of music on.
Okay.
And the lads made a video at some garage.
Okay.
Like a Statoil garage, but it wasn't. That would have been Texaco or something. But I was laughing, going, could you imagine 70s Ireland? You're driving along going, geez, I better get a bit of petrol. And there's five Indians with the full headdress doing a music video.
I heard, what's his name, Gavin Friday being interviewed a while back, and he was talking about some movie he had done or something recently that was kind of based on them.
Really?
Yeah, so he was like a show band singer in the movie, and I think they based the band on the Indians.
They were I loved, but then again, I was into Cowboys and Indians growing up. Yeah, John Wayne, all that kind of malarkey, you know, the Man with No Name, all that stuff.
That's it,
So that's on the 27th. That's going to be some shindig, because, I mean, it's Christmas time.
Yeah. I know, I'm really looking forward to that because Mick is fantastic too. He's a great singer. He plays banjo and plays guitar and various other bits and pieces, but he's the real deal.
He's the real deal. Yeah. So are you too, my friend.
A work in progress.
And have you anything else coming up gigs-wise then? I mean, that's December covered. Anything early in the new year, or is it all to be planned?
No, that's all to be planned, yeah.
So busy time. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, I always love that somebody would give up the time to come and chat to me about their four most personal babies, as I call it. And it's never lost on me that someone has taken the time to come in and chat to me about it.
That's great. Thanks a million. And look, it's fantastic to have the opportunity to do that as well, you know.
Yeah.
To open my brain up and, you know,
yeah,
spill the contents out.
Keep on keeping on, as they say.
That's it. Great stuff. Thanks, Pierce.